I wonder if you can relate to any of these scenarios, circumstances. Let me give you one to begin with. You're feeling a little bit lonely, maybe isolated. And you know that the best thing you could do would be to get out of your house and go and meet some people. You know the best thing you could do would be to go along to a life group gathering, or to come along on a Sunday, or to reach out to some friends and say, hey, can we go and get a coffee? Or to go to some other club or community that you're part of. I don't know. You know that would be the best thing that you could do, but you just can't make yourself do it. You just can't make yourself get out of the house. Maybe you convince yourself, no one likes me. No one wants to see me. No one wants me there. I'm not going to go. I'm not welcome there. Maybe you convince yourself of that. Even though maybe deep down you know that that's not true. Maybe you fully intend to go. You're like, I know this is the best thing for me. I know that this is what I should do. And you get yourself all geared up all day. You're planning to go. And then something happens. And when it comes to it, you just don't. You just don't quite do it. You don't get out the door. You do get out the door, but you turn away before. I don't know, whatever it is. You just don't quite make it. Instead, you stay at home, end up feeling worse than you did before. Because not only are you still down and still lonely, but now you're annoyed at yourself for your inability to do the very thing that you know would help. I don't know. Maybe that rings some bells for some of you. Maybe that's a circumstance, a scenario you can relate to. Let me give you another one. Maybe you've committed to spending less. I need to spend money. I need less money. I need to cut down on my spending. Or to drinking less. Or to eating less. Or to, you know, just doing less of something. But on one evening, you just decide, oh, I'm just going to do it, to hell with the consequences. I'm just going to open that bottle of wine, eat that chocolate bar, buy that porcelain cat to add to your collection. I don't know. Whatever it is. And the next day, you wake up and wonder, why did I do it? You wake up and see yourself in yet more debt with one more porcelain cat, or a bit, or another hangover, or just feeling a little bit sick again. You know, you wake up the next morning, you say, why did I do that? I'd said I wasn't going to do it, and then I just went and did it. And now this morning, I regret it, and I wish I hadn't. Or let me give you one more. I'm just going to do one more. How about this one? You get home from work one day, and you're feeling a little bit grumpy. I don't know, maybe it's been a difficult day, or maybe there's no real reason for it. You just walk through the door, and you instantly transition to being a little bit grumpy and annoyed. And as you walk through the door, you find a million things to irritate you. You know, you yell at the kids because they left their shoes in the porch. And then you end up in an argument with your spouse about what have they been doing all day, why you've been at work, and how come they have to come home, and how come you have to come home and do the washing up, or whatever it is. You end up with an argument about that. And after yelling at your kids and arguing with your spouse, you go up to bed early and wonder, why did I behave like that? Like, what have I gained from all my annoyance, from all my irritability? How has that improved my life in any way? I'm less happy, my family are less happy, we're all more annoyed with each other, our relationships are even worse. And you think, oh man, I just wish I hadn't done that. But actually, if you're honest, it's not an aberration, it's become a bit of a pattern. It's not something you just do once, you've done it regularly. And over time, you can feel yourself sabotaging your relationships. You know, just destroying them, but wearing them down. But you don't seem able to break it. You know it's destructive. You know it's unhelpful. You know no one's gaining from it. And yet, you keep repeating the actions over and over again. I've recently been slowly working through a book called The Brothers Karamazov. The reason I've been slowly working through it is because it's really, really long. And I've been slowly battling through this book. And there's this scene in the book that reminds me of those kind of scenarios. What happens is the main character, who has a Russian name that I've never bothered learning how to pronounce. Let's go with Ayosha, maybe. I think, broadly speaking, that's how it's spelled, Ayosha. He goes on his travels around the planet. He meets this family. And the family are in a desperate situation. The guy's lost his job. He was in the army. He's been disbanded. He's not in the army anymore. So he's lost his job. He's got a wife and a daughter who are severely sick, and he's looking after them. He's got son who just keeps getting himself into trouble over and over and over again, keeping on kind of causing mayhem. And they live in just this desperate situation where they haven't got enough food, they haven't really got anywhere suitable to live, they're just trying to find a space they can live. And during this conversation, Iosa learns that this guy dreams of a different kind of life. You know, he dreams of, it's like a simple life in some ways, he dreams of buying a horse, setting up a business, moving away from the place they're in, a fresh start with the family, a place where his wife and daughter could maybe get a little bit better, a place where his son could get out of some of the trouble that he's got himself into. He dreams of this place. And Iosa at one point gets to a position where he's able to offer them a significant amount of money. Enough money that they could buy their horse and they could move out of this place and they could have this life that they dream of. And as Iosha's talking to them about it, the guy starts getting really excited about this prospect. They're really excited about the idea of, I can get this money and then think of how much better it would be for my spouse, think of how much better it would be for my children, think of the kind of life we could have, a fresh start. It would make all the difference. But then just seemingly out of nowhere, he grabs the money and he scrumples it up and he throws it away. And he walks away from it, back to his life with his kind of hopeless future ahead of him. He destroys this chance he has of the life he's dreamt of and returns to that desperate position, seemingly inexplicably. You know, well, why did he do it? What prompted that? Now, the reason that accounts like that exist in the Brothers Karamazov, the reason why those scenarios that I talked about ring true for so many of us is, I think, because to some extent, all of us have experienced something a bit like that. We've both observed it in other people and we've seen it in ourselves. We know that we have the capacity to be irrationally destructive. And we've seen other people, and we see them living their lives, and we think, man, why are they just doing those things? Why are they so intent for everything just to burn? We know there are times in our life where we push people away for no real reason. We know there are times when we refuse to do what is good for us, and instead stubbornly head off down the path that we know is going to be destructive. Now don't get me wrong, I'm not saying we do this all the time. Like, sometimes we make bad decisions because we just get it wrong, right? We think about it, we weigh up, and we make the wrong decision. Sometimes we just accidentally make mistakes. But I want us to just be honest with yourself. If I look at myself, sometimes I'm willfully destructive. I know the thing I'm doing is only going to cause pain and damage and destruction, and yet I still do it. It's not always an accident. It's not always a mistake. We know we're going to cause pain and damage, and yet we do it anyway. We know the words are going to hurt others and make us unhappy, and yet we say them anyway. We know the thoughts aren't true, but we just can't shake them. And so we allow them to keep us from things which will be good for us or to drive us into things we know are going to be harmful. This is why those kind of scenarios, this is why that story in Brothers Karamazov rings true, because we know that there's times where we just sort of irrationally destroy things. And the question I just want us to consider is why? Like, why does that happen? Why do we have that capacity in us? Why do I have that capacity in me? Why do so many people seem to have that capacity in them? Why are we so often powerless against our unhelpful thought patterns, against our destructive impulses, against our harmful behaviours? Well, in today's account, I said we're going to be in Mark 5. We are. Let's get there now. In today's account, we're going to meet sort of an extreme example of this. And I just wanted to see what light this can offer into that issue. If you've got Mark 5 open, I just want to do the first 13 verses now, and then I'm going to look at 14 to 20 in a minute. Let me do 1 to 13 first. Let me read those for us. They, this is Jesus and his disciples, they went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day, among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want from me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you impure spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs, allow us to go into them." He gave them permission, and the impure spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. Okay, so here in this story, in this account from Jesus' life, we meet this person who's living this incredibly self-destructive life. We're told he lives amongst the tombs, spends his time crying out, cutting himself. If you look at this person's life, he's been ostracized from society. That's why he's living among these tombs. They don't want him in the town. He can't live among the people. He's an outsider. But more than that, he's taken to harming himself. He cuts himself. No one has been able to help him. No one's even sure how to. They've tried chaining him up, which doesn't sound like the greatest way to help him, but presumably in an attempt to try and stop him harming himself, maybe to stop him harming other people, we don't know. But it doesn't work. No one's strong enough. No one can keep him from this life that he's living. But amazingly, in verse 6, Jesus arrives on the scene, and that dynamic immediately changes, right? So suddenly, the dynamic isn't, here is a man who no one can subdue, but the man immediately falls on his feet in front of Jesus, on his knees. Immediately subdued. You know, this is completely different. Jesus doesn't do anything. He doesn't grab him. He doesn't chain him. There's no physical force here. But immediately, the man is subdued. He's on his knees in front of Jesus. And he's asking Jesus, "Jesus, what do you want from me?" And Jesus recognizes impure spirits at work in this man. That's what he says. And so he tells these spirits to leave him. The spirits ask Jesus, they say, "Don't send us away from here, but rather send them into the pigs," which is what Jesus does, resulting in this death of a huge herd of pigs. Now, I want us to be as upfront as we can about all these stories as we come into them. Okay? And let's be honest, there's a few strange things in this story. There's a few things that are difficult for me, difficult for us to get our head around. For one, Jesus permitting these spirits to go to the pigs and the resulting death of these pigs, that's a bit confusing. But before we get to that, I think for me at least, there's one even bigger, more fundamental thing that we've got to get our heads around if we're going to do this story, and that is the presence of impure spirits. Now, for some of you, this might not be an issue. I don't know. We're all different. But for me and the way I see the world, this is something that I've got to get my head around. I've got to work out what does that mean. I guess I want to say to begin with that identifying and seeing what is going on here as demonic, that's an interpreted lens. Now, don't rule me out quite yet. Let me explain what I mean by that. By that I mean, it's a way of interpreting and describing what is going on here. Now, some of you might hear that and say, this sounds like you don't believe in it. I want to categorically say that is not what I'm saying. It's not that I don't believe in demons and demonic forces. The Bible is pretty clear on that. There are, just as there are good spiritual beings, God and angels, so there are bad spiritual beings, often called Satan and demons. Now, the Bible talks about those things. And so what I'm saying by describing it as an interpretive lens is simply that it can't be scientifically proven. You can't x-ray a person and see the presence of a demon any more than you could cut a person open and find the Holy Spirit in them. These are just not things you can do. What is being talked about cannot be demonstrated in that way. But that is, of course, true of many things. It's true of beauty. You know, you can't identify beauty in a person. You can't analyze, you can't extract it from a human being. You can't do that with morality. You can't do it with any philosophy or faith or belief, actually. That's just not how it works. And so, in this man who's been ostracized from society, who's living this destructive lifestyle, who's so afraid of Jesus, I just want to suggest there's certain really obvious things that point to the existence and presence of these impure spirits in him. Let me try and give you a few examples. The first is the destructive nature of what's going on. This man is trying to harm himself. As I said earlier, I assume he's been a threat to others, and that's partly why he's been driven out of town and why they've sought to chain him. And here's what I want to say. In everything destructive, there is something of the demonic. Because God is committed to creation and restoration, whereas evil spiritual forces are committed to destruction and corruption. And so in everything that is destructive, there is something of the demonic, because all destruction has as its source those spiritual forces who hate God and are committed to destroying what he's made. I think that's really the prime significance in sending those spirits into the pigs and seeing them destroy the pigs, is you see their destructive intent. These are forces that are committed, beings that are committed to destroying. And at the source of all destruction and all corruption is something of those spiritual forces that oppose to God. That's the first thing that I think points to that. The second thing is the degree to which the man seems out of control. The fact that the person is not simply able to solve this issue himself, to, in the words of Charlie Sheen, blink and cure his brain, that points to the existence of evil forces and influences outside of himself. And the third thing that I think points to it is this fear of Jesus. You see, these evil spiritual forces, they're opposed to God. They're opposed to God from the beginning. And so where you see that kind of irrational hostility towards Jesus, where you feel that inside you and experience it in others, that points to something of those spiritual beings that hate God, hate everything he's about, and don't want anything to do with Jesus. As I said at the start, I want to card on the table as much as I can here. I've been brought up in a Western materialist culture. That's the primary way I think. I don't find it easy to think about or accept ideas of demons and evil spiritual forces. That's just not where I'm at. I'm aware different people have been brought up differently. Some people find that easier to engage with than I will. But I don't find that an easy thing to get my head around. I find myself tempted to explain them away and minimize them. You know, to be like, how do they really exist? Is there really such a thing? How active really are they? However, here's what I want to say. Given the level of destruction I see in our world, more than that, given the level of irrational destruction that I see in the world, but also that I seem to bring into my own life, given the resistance to Jesus, which seems to exist without very much reason, just a general hostility towards him, given how much pain and destruction we seem to be powerless to resist, I don't think it's unreasonable to believe that there are evil beings who are at work in our world. I guess at its heart, and only you can answer this, at its heart, the question is, do you believe in evil? And if you do, where do you think it comes from? Now that's the critical question, right? Do you believe in evil? Irrational destructive destruction? Does it merely come from human beings? Do we just create it? Is all evil have at its source just humanity? Or is there enough to suggest in all of history, in all of our hearts, and in all that we see around us, is there enough to suggest that actually there is more to evil than simple human thoughts and actions? That's the question you have to answer if, like me, your default is Western materialist kind of way of seeing things. one of the things I find so compelling about this section of Mark's gospel is that it seems to me that Jesus here deals with the issues we really care about and simultaneously feel the most powerless to do anything about. That's what I think is amazing about this section. Jesus deals with things we really care about and things that we by ourselves are incredibly powerless to do anything about. So 2 weeks ago, when we were in Mark 4, the end of Mark 4, we saw Jesus dealing with nature. This world we live in that seems so damaged, where we see this kind of sweeping change in the world, which has led people to be incredibly concerned and terrified of climate change, of the things that are going on, of what's going on in nature and what that means for us as a species. You see that and we care about it. It must be one of the issues that most people care about kind of most strongly in the moment. And yet it also seems outside of human control. You look at it and it just seems so terrible. You're like, oh, but you know, these things are still going to happen. People are still going to do this. All these things are going to go on. How do we ever address it? And then at the end of Mark 4, we see Jesus speaks to nature and nature listens. You know, nature itself is subject to him. He offers a salvation for the planet, for the physical world we live in. That's something we care about that we can't deal with. Here in Mark 5, this is something different, but something I think we care about as much, if not more. We see a man who is completely trapped in this pattern of destructive behavior. And he finds complete relief from it in the person of Jesus. As I've been thinking about this, I've been struck by how many of the things that I think we feel like we need rescuing from, we feel like we need relief from, are internal. You know, the things inside of us. That's in some ways the great fear of mental health issues. They have the capacity to lead to all kinds of destructive behaviors. And yet we feel so powerless to resist them. We know they're destructive, and yet we can't stop thinking that way. And just like I was saying before about how in everything that is destructive, there is something of the demonic, something of those impure spirits in it. For the same reasons, I want to suggest that there is something of those same forces in those issues that we face. But for a start, mental health issues normally have at their core some lie which we believe and cannot shake. You know, that'll be different depending on the issue, whether that's that we need to turn the lights on and off 5 times to be safe, whether that's that nobody likes us, whether that's that things are more unsafe than they actually are. These are lies which we believe. And maybe in our rational moments, which we know are lies, and yet we can't stop believing them. And the Bible says that Satan is the father of lies. That all lies have at their origin that those impure, evil, spiritual beings who are opposed to God. And so because of that, we can say that anything that has at its core a lie has something of the demonic in it. Again, just to move on to something else we said, mental health issues are often destructive. The reason we care so much about them is because we see the damage they cause. We see the relationships they destroy. We can see the pain that they cause to us and to those around us. And perhaps now more than ever in society, we're starting to see the deaths that they cause. And again, all death, all destruction finds its natural home, not with God, but with his enemies. God is, as Amy was reminded at the start, God is light and he is life. No death finds its source in God, rather it finds its source in those enemies of him. And I guess the third thing we could say about mental health issues as we face them is that often they feel outside of our control. We feel powerless to resist them. We know it's untrue, we know it's destructive, and yet we can't defeat it. And so, just as a couple of weeks ago we were going, look, our world, our planet needs rescue from the decay and destruction that we seem intent on bringing on it. So, this week, I think we can say that we ourselves needs a saviour from the destruction and evil which lives inside us. It's not only the planet that needs rescuing, right? It's us. It's me. This is why people so often say, you know, you can't escape yourself. Like when the thing you need saving from is kind of internal, then where do you find hope for that? Like this man, we need saving from evil. Like this man, we need saving from ourselves, from the ways that we think, from the ways that we behave, whatever their causes, which are always many. Jesus can save you from impure spirits. Jesus can save you from spiritual evil. Jesus can save us from the things that we do and from the things that we think. You just look with me. I said I'd read the end. Let me read the end. Just look with me at the complete transformation which comes about this man. Verse 14. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, resting in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And all the people were amazed. You see it there. Jesus brings freedom to this man. And this transformation seems to be complete. You have this phrase, which is, he's sitting there, dressed, and in his right mind. You see how mental the issue he was going through with. Presumably previously he wasn't in his right mind, which is why now they comment that he is in his right mind. So the question is, what are you going to do with this account of Jesus' life? I said at the start, we want the actual accounts of what Jesus is reported to have done and said. We want those to influence the way we understand the world, the way we understand ourselves, the way we understand who the person of Jesus is. So what are you going to do with this? As we see this Jesus has the power to deliver us from evil. You know, that phrase we say again and again in the Lord's Prayer, deliver us from evil. The Jesus who has the ability to do that, to heal our minds, to restore us to our right minds, what are you going to do with that person? And what's amazing here is you see the two responses. You see them played out for you right here in this story. The two options that are available to you. The first, you see from the people all around about, what do? They beg Jesus to leave. They say, "We don't want you here. We don't want anything to do with you." They don't like what they've seen. Maybe they don't like the idea of demons. Maybe they don't know what to make of thousands of pigs careering to their death. Maybe they can't make sense of the transformation that's seen in this man. Maybe they preferred life before Jesus was around, a life where things like this didn't happen, and they could just ignore the evil and pain and destruction around them, and they could just crack on with their lives. Jesus turns up and makes things weird, and he makes them scary, and we don't want to consider it, we don't want to think about it, we don't even want to give any space for the idea that there could be such a thing as spiritual evil and that we could need rescuing. We don't like any of that. Just go away from us, Jesus. Leave us alone. Let us get back to our lives. It's an option available to you. All of you can decide to do that this afternoon. You can go, actually, I hear this, but that's not a world I want to live in. I don't want to face up to a world that could have evil in it. I don't want to face up to a world that could have things that I can't defeat by myself, that I can't deal with. I don't want to see a world where I'm the thing that needs rescuing. I don't mind that for other people, but not for me. Go, leave me alone, let me get back to my life. That's an option. It's there for you. It's what it seems like most of the people here choose to do. And then there's a second right, isn't there? Because the man who's been freed, he sees things differently. He does the exact opposite. You get the same phrase. They beg Jesus to leave them, and he begs to go with Jesus. It's like the exact opposite. As Jesus is leaving, he's saying, "Let me come with you." He gets this glimpse of the freedom Jesus can offer. He knows that there's evil and destruction because he's experienced it. He knows that he was powerless to resist it. He's seen the rescue that Jesus can offer. He's seen that Jesus actually makes a difference in
areas outside of his control. And so he says, Jesus, let me come with you. Let me follow you. That is fundamentally the invitation that we make every time we come together as a church. The invitation we make to people who've been following Jesus all their life. It's an invitation that we make to people who've never followed him ever up to this point. It's the invitation to open our eyes to all those things we care about but which we cannot solve, and then come to Jesus and find that he promises rescue from those things. To say, actually, yeah, there are things that are outside our ability to deal with. We don't need advice. We don't need to just feel a little bit different about ourselves. We need rescue. We need a savior. That's why Jesus has always been called that for 2,000 years. We need someone who can save us. And we see in Jesus the promised rescue that we long for. And so we say, Jesus, I come to you and I want to follow you. That's basically what it means to be a Christian, right? That's what a Christian is somebody who follows Jesus. And my prayer for every one of us is that we would come to Jesus. We would experience his power at work in our lives. And then we would follow him until one day all evil, all brokenness, all destruction, even, dare I say, all mental health issues are finally no more. Let me pray, and then I'll hand over to Amy, who'll lead us into a time of response.